Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Karma You podcast. This is your host, Chloe Brotheridge. I'm a coach, a hypnotherapist, and an author of The Anxiety Solution and Brave New Girl. Thanks so much for listening today. I am really excited about this episode. I'm interviewing Caroline Foran, who is a best-selling author. She's written two books. One's called Owning It. The other is called The Confidence Kit. And she's currently writing her third book as well. She's also the host of the Owning It Anxiety podcast, which is incredibly popular. And I think you're going to love this episode. She shares so honestly and openly. She's got a really no-nonsense approach. She really helps to make sense of our anxiety for us and gives practical ways that we can start to feel better. We talk about her experience of anxiety, and I think it's a story that a lot of you will resonate with. We discuss why so many of us are anxious and the sort of factors that can make a big difference. We talk about loads of practical ways to deal with anxiety. And we also get into how to support a friend who is struggling, or how to explain to your friends or your partner about your own anxiety. And this is the last and final call for the Brave New You Confidence Challenge. It's starting on the 24th of February 2020. If you want to get involved, just head over to karmayou.com/confidence and pop your email address in there, and I'll send you all the details about the challenge. This challenge is for you if you want to start to feel more comfortable doing things that in the past have made you feel uncomfortable. If you want to live more of your life and feel better about who you are and start saying no more to things that you don't want to do. It's also for you if you're somebody that wants to feel more confident with people, if you're looking to make new friends this year, but shyness has held you back. And if you want to quieten the inner critic and create more love for yourself, more kindness for yourself, more self-acceptance, this challenge is absolutely for you. Join for free at karmayou.com/confidence. And if this date has passed, still head over to that link, because if you enter your details there, you can get free resources for confidence. And I'll let you know when the next challenge is coming up as well. So let's get into the interview with Caroline Foran. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. I'm so honored to be asked to be on your podcast as well. I know it's so successful. And so congratulations to you for everything.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a big fan of your writing and your podcast. And a lot of people have contacted me requesting that you come on this podcast. So
lots of people have mentioned you.
So,
oh, wow. I always just think it's just like my mom and my husband who reads my stuff or listens to me. So that's really nice to hear.
Yeah, so lovely. Can you just share with us, for people that maybe don't know you and your work, what it is that you do and how you got to where you are today?
Yes. So, God, it's almost a question of how much time do you have for me to answer that? Because as you know yourself, like working for yourself, you end up becoming a bit of a forward slasher where you've got loads of different things going on. So I guess first and foremost, I'm a journalist, and then I was writing articles about my experience of anxiety for different Irish publications over here. And I wrote a piece that was a very practical guide to how I found was helpful to manage anxiety versus everything else I was reading. A lot of the stuff that I was reading was coming from the US, and it was all very, oh, just, you know, chill and relax. And I was like, okay, that's not actually all that helpful to be told that. So I guess I was coming at it from a fresher angle of like, this is what it's really like, and this is all bullshit. Basically, we need to approach it a lot more practically. And I was really lucky in that my publisher read the article, got in touch, said, have you ever thought about writing a book? I thought that you must have the wrong email, fell off my chair probably, and then was kind of greeted with another wave of anxiety of, oh shit, I have to do this now. So that was a good few years ago. God, I kind of losing track of time, but that was 2017, I think my first book came out. And then that was just sort of, was a kind of a fluke. Well, I mean, I don't want to talk myself down, but it just went kind of viral. I didn't realize when I was writing it to the extent how much people needed something like that, and how many people were just like me, were really, really struggling and felt completely lost at sea. So its success was like completely mind blowing to me. And then they wanted to follow up with the second book. So this time it was called the first one was called Owning It. And the second one is called The Confidence Kit. So the second one is sort of mirroring my experience as I went on. So I went from really struggling with anxiety to not being able to leave my house, that kind of thing, to getting to a point where I was owning it and I was able to function. But then when the first book came out, suddenly I was on this new kind of platform where I was asked to come and give talks in different companies and be this sort of spokesperson in Ireland for mental health and for anxiety in particular. So while I had gotten to a point where I felt like I could manage the anxiety, I didn't have any confidence, and I had to then deal with things like public speaking, which is a whole other, you know, considering I wasn't able to leave my house, that was just quite a big ask for me. So then I was like, okay, I have this whole other journey to go on now to understand, you know, what's holding me back, the fear of failure, what actual confidence is, the difference between confidence and courage, all of that kind of thing. So that became the second book. And then the third book, which is coming out in May, is going to be all about vulnerability, which I think has, if I look back at my career, has been the key to my success, has been a willingness to be vulnerable. And I think we all have that in common. We're all afraid to be vulnerable. We all are vulnerable. And if we all can start to embrace it in some way, whether it's in your relationship or in your work life, amazing things can happen. So that's kind of my book. A brief history of my book career so far, and then I have the podcast as well, which sprang from the book, which was amazing actually, because so many people, I'm sure it's the same for you, are listeners of content more so than readers. So they didn't know about the book, or maybe they came to it from a different way. And I think with anxiety, it's the kind of content, it's nice to have it in your ears because it's sort of reassuring, and it's kind of like a therapy in itself to hear people talk about something that's you're going through. So that has worked out really well. And then I still work as a journalist, writing different bits and bobs. And I'm not just interested in anxiety and well-being, I'm interested a lot in beauty and in interiors as well. So I've definitely kept busy.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Sorry, that was the longest answer ever.
No, that's perfect. Thank you. Yeah. Oh, wow. So your new book sounds like just the thing. I think that's such an important topic. And I think when we're anxious, the thought of being vulnerable is completely terrifying. And there's so much shame. I know there was for me when I was really experiencing a lot of social anxiety, so much shame around it that I had this wall up and put a mask on. And the thought of being vulnerable was the worst thing.
And that's all it is. But when you, like, the secret is when you are willing to accept it and that we, like, embrace your vulnerability, the fear goes out of it massively.
Yes.
And that was just such an unbelievable learning curve for me that has gone on to have a massively profound impact on not just my experience of the world, but actually giving me success as well. You know, when we get to a point of stop feeling that shame for something that is common to, like, all of us, you know, we're all walking around trying to pretend like nothing phases us, like we're perfectly well adjusted, and none of us are. So why don't we just all let each other off the hook?
I love that. That's, yeah, very, very good reminder to all of us. I know that you share in your book, your first book, Owning It, a lot about your own experience of anxiety. Can you share a little bit of that with people so that they have a sense of where you were kind of coming from?
Yeah, I always feel when people ask me this question that my story is rather unexciting or not as dramatic as maybe you'd expect from someone who's written a book about anxiety. But actually what I've realized is that my story is like so many other people's story, in that it's just a case of I had too much change happen too quickly in my life at one time. And it was just stress that just I left unaddressed, and it turned into anxiety, which is, you always think of anxiety as happening, something that you experience if something really traumatic or a major life event happens, not when you're kind of sailing along, you know, happy enough. It kind of crept up on me in that way. So I was in a job that I really loved and things were going great. I think I've probably always had an anxious nature, but I was it wasn't really an issue in my life at that point. And then I was headhunted into a new role, which sounded very exciting. And I kind of ignored my gut reaction and my instincts and everyone else who said, I don't know about this. You know, the people had heard different things about this new startup company. And I just kind of wanted to ignore all that. And that was probably one of the first lessons, was to always trust your gut, or at least give it some attention and hear it out. And then I went into that job, and it was from the get-go, from day one, I just felt this horrible sense of dread in my body of what have I done? I don't want to be here. They were having conversations about, you know, 5-year plans. And I was like, I couldn't cope with the idea. I was like, I can't believe I've just left something that I was perfectly happy in. And so what started out about anxiety as anxiety about this job change became anxiety about, you know, well, I can't tell anyone that I'm not able to cope because I've made this leap. And you know, anxiety about what people would think about me, anxiety about how it would affect my relationship. So at the same time, I had just moved in with my boyfriend. So that was like within 2 weeks of moving in, I started this new job. And we were, you know, in the really like honeymoon phase of being very in love. And suddenly I started to not feel well. It manifested very much for me in my gut. So my stomach has always been the sort of means of communication through which my anxiety has always said, hey, we don't like this. And then it was like, what's this going to do to our relationship? You know, this is not what he signed up for. Anxiety about my ability to cope. Why can't I cope when other people are handling so much more stress? And it just kind of grew and grew and snowballed. And what was probably the worst thing about it was that I had no awareness. I didn't even identify it as anxiety. I didn't understand anxiety. I thought I was losing my mind. And all of that exacerbated it further. I was living my life from one panic attack to the next. I eventually had to stop working because I was that unwell. And I just kind of unraveled and felt terrified that I had lost myself, that I was never going to be the same again or feel like myself again. And I was just completely in the dark. And everyone else around me were looking at me like, Jesus, I don't know what to say to her. I don't know what's wrong with her. So that even made it worse because no one else understood it either. So it was a real journey of, okay, I need to figure this out for myself because I didn't have a book like mine or yours to turn to at that time, because anxiety wasn't something that was spoken about the way it is now. It was very much the reserve of people who, you know, in movies and TV, like who are on medication or go through something major. And I just thought, that's not me. So why could something like this happen to me when I have a perfect life for all intents and purposes, a great family, I had a great job, I had great friends, a roof over my head. This shouldn't have happened to me. And I felt like I had no right to feel this anxious. And then that compounds it even further. So it was just a shit show, really, of all these different anxieties that just came to a head all at one time.
I'm sure lots of people listening can relate to that, that there's almost this pressure that we put on ourselves because we think I should be able to cope with this. Or we think, oh, I'm, you know, I've got a roof over my head. I know you talk about this in your book. I've got a roof over my head. I've got enough food. Who am I to complain about things?
Yeah.
And yet that just adds in an extra level of kind of pressure that is we don't need, and it makes things so much worse.
It adds in an extra layer of pressure, but it's also completely irrelevant, which is something it took me a long time to learn. And this is something I've had repeatedly impressed upon me by neuroscientists and, you know, clinical psychologists who say it doesn't matter if someone else is going through something far worse on paper. It doesn't matter if you're in a really affluent position or you're so lucky or fortunate or wealthy. It's all about how your body responds to stress and the hormones involved. It doesn't give a shit if you've got a huge income in your bank account or whether you're really popular or whether you're not. It doesn't care. It's a physiological response that can go out of control and become far too oversensitive when really it's not supposed to react in those situations normally for you. So all those added anxieties were definitely having a physiological further impact on me. In no way was it helpful. In no way was thinking, well, Caroline, it could be so much worse off. In no way was that going to help calm down the anxiety. That just made me berate myself even more. And to this day, that's one of the first things I try and knock out of people's heads when they say that, is your hormonal balance right now does not know one person from the next. It's your body. It's all relative. You have every right to feel the way that you do, and you do not need to justify it to anyone. It doesn't matter if you've started to experience anxiety because you know, it was a bit windy today, or it doesn't have to be some life-altering thing. It can happen. And when it happens, it's crap.
Yeah, I think that's such an important message for people to learn. And yeah, just so good to hear that reminder about that. Thank you. What do you pin the high levels of anxiety that we have in our society right now on? Are you somebody that thinks, right, you know, some people say it's social media, other people say social media hasn't really got much to do with it, it's other issues. What do you see as the kind of reason why we have so many people experiencing anxiety?
I think there's a lot of reasons. I think the social media definitely has exacerbated it. It's made social comparison, which is can induce anxiety, a lot easier because we have instant access to seeing what everyone else has going on. And we've heard the phrase a million times that you're comparing your behind the scenes with someone else's highlights reel. And just even the physical picking up and the constant connectedness or feeling of having to be plugged into something, I think, is one element. But I think really we're all walking around with a greater tendency towards anxiety today because we have an old brain for a very new world. And our brain still reacts to fear in the same way it did when we were in hunter-gatherer times, when, you know, someone said to me the other day about your ancestor was the anxious person. The person who wasn't anxious did not survive. They would have been eaten. So we all come from a long line of warriors, which makes me feel a little bit better about the fact that actually we're the smart ones because we stayed alive. So yeah, like you would have had an initial fear response, and that all happens with the primitive part of your brain. And that still happens. Like everything we experience in the world still first go through that primitive part of your brain before it has a chance to go up to your more logical, rational, newer part of your brain. You can't cheat that. You can't outsmart that. So we're still experiencing all the same reactions to threats. But the threats that we face these days are more like emotional threats or threats to our sense of self esteem or our self-worth or what people would think of us, our sense of control over ourselves. It's just a different kind of threat, but our body is reacting in the same way. And someone else said to me that it's like having the fire alarm go off every time, or the smoke alarm go off every time you use a toaster, when you only want it to go off when there's a fire. And we are more stressed out now than ever because I guess we're expecting more from ourselves. We're trying to do it all, especially women. I think we feel this pressure based on generations that came before us who maybe didn't have as many opportunities as we do. We feel this pressure to fulfill all of that because we're so lucky. And eventually something's got to give, you know. And I think what's happening for most people is that they're expecting so much of themselves in all aspects of their life, and they end up just wearing down the part of their brain that helps to mediate anxiety and fear. And when that happens, your fear response is kind of more often than not in the driving seat. So we start to react to things that we normally react fine to because stressed out has become our new baseline and we're not even necessarily aware of it. So I think there's a lot of that. I don't necessarily know that we are more anxious now than like my parents' generation. I just think that we are talking about it and we are able to, we have language around it. Whereas I know, I mean, my husband's a relative of his, when Barry was growing up, it was easier at the time for them to say that this man had died than to say that he had gone off to an asylum, because that was how much shame there was around it. And there was no support, there was no treatment that we have these days, there was no CBT. So I don't think that we're like the snowflake generation. I just think that we are willing to confront it, and we're not willing to just endure it. We want to enjoy our lives while we're here and not just realize when it's too late, oh, we shouldn't have been so stressed out or we shouldn't have worked so hard. But I do think like social media has definitely, I find social media quite anxiety inducing, while at the same time it's a tool for me to, you know, put my own work out there and connect with people. So it's like a double-edged sword, I think.
This podcast is sponsored by Blinkist. In today's age, it can be hard to find even a brief moment to disconnect and learn something new. It's not easy with everyone and everything competing for your time and attention. And so you might think that you don't even have time to read a book. And I know that I've been there as well. If this sounds familiar, there's an app that I really want to recommend to you. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is an app that condenses best-selling nonfiction books down to their key takeaways for you to read or listen to in 15 minutes. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to understand the main points of a book quickly without having to read the whole thing cover to cover. You can easily fit in several titles a day, and if you're on the go, you can just switch to the audio version. 12 million people are already using Blinkist to deepen their knowledge in 27 categories of nonfiction, everything from self-improvement, personal growth, leadership, mindfulness, and happiness. I like Blinkist because I love learning and improving my mindset while I'm on the move. I love to read it while I'm on the bus, or listen to it at the gym, or when I'm cooking dinner. I just listened to Michelle Obama's Becoming, and it was brilliant. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for Karma U's audience. So if you head to blinkist.com/KarmaU, you can start your free 7-day trial and you'll get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled blinkist.com/KarmaU to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/KarmaU. Yeah, a lot of people that I speak to who use social media for their job find that it's, you know, it's an amazing thing, but it's also, you kind of feel like you have to be on there. And so if it's triggering you or you're triggering comparison, then that can be a tricky thing to have to navigate.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to realize that you can really curate your own social media feed to suit you. And I've done that. Like, I've gotten very ruthless about muting any account that doesn't make me feel good, or if it makes me, it's nothing to do with the person, I'm sure they're a lovely person. If I start to think, oh, I'm not doing that, or if it has any negative bearing on me, it's easier out of sight and out of mind, you know, because the thing is, you can tell yourself again and again and again, don't compare. To compare is to despair. But we all do it. We've always done it all through history, all through evolution, as a way to get a measure of our sense of self-worth. Obviously, it's not a helpful measure of our sense of self-worth, but we're always going to do it. So sometimes you need to accept that, okay, it's natural to do it, but also put boundaries in place to mean that you do it less.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, yeah, I love that acknowledgement that it's natural to compare. So actually make, you know, set things up in your life so that you're less likely to get exposed to things that are going to trigger that, essentially.
Yeah, like the biggest learning for me in all of this has been not trying not to react to things that are so naturally the way we react. So whether it's stop trying not to compare yourself or stop trying to prevent an anxious feeling from happening in the first place, it happens before consciousness is aware of it. It happens. What the power you have is in your response to it and how you choose to act and behave. It's in that little gap between stimulus and response is where you have power. People are so desperate to not have any anxiety in their life. You know, I would have, for example, had a goal of getting up and giving a public speaking engagement without feeling any anxiety. That's just a surefire way to feel more of it. I'm going to have that response. It's okay. My body and my mind feels that there's some kind of risk in this situation. There's some kind of threat. It happens before I've had a chance to digest it and process it. But again, it gets up to my prefrontal cortex, which is where I have the power. I can choose to say, okay, you know, this makes sense. You're about to give a public speaking thing. That's a bit scary. You're worried about what people will think of you. That's normally can't help that. But let's try and use this energy as fuel to get you through it. So it's not about not having anxiety. It's about accepting it and having it and managing it and owning it. And when you do that, it just simmers right down.
Yeah, I love that. Description of owning it rather than trying to cure it or make it disappear. It's almost like we can't, when we try and cure it, what we often do is just suppress it, and that never really works for long.
But like, you're trying to suppress thousands of years of evolution. Like, you're not going to do it. You can't just tell yourself, oh, I know I shouldn't be anxious, so why can't I just not feel that way? It's happened. So for me, that might sound like, Jesus, do we have any hope at all? But actually, it's quite liberating to be like, let yourself feel it. And for me, of all the different ways of managing anxiety, something that I was probably most reluctant about would have been mindfulness. And, you know, I would have just thought, oh, like, fuck off. Like, you know, if I could just sit there and think about, be mindful, I would have done that by now. For me, it was such a physical thing. But actually, all of the research suggests that because, right, what I was explaining there, we're so used to everything coming through our primitive brain and then going upstairs to the executives. this actually strengthens the connection in the other way. So it mindfulness, regular mindfulness, it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of effort and commitment, but it strengthens the big guns that you have up here in your head, in the front of your head, so that you can stop, you can help to calm down that response. And that's probably the most scientifically proven and supported and backed way of owning your anxiety over time.
Can you share a bit about what are the things that have really helped you in terms of practical things, or I don't know, types of therapy that you've tried? What are the things that have helped you the most?
Yeah, well, mindfulness is probably one of the most recent additions that I like I said, I was skeptical of before. Another one is CBT, which is just, you cannot argue with this. It's so CBT, as you know, is cognitive behavioral therapy, where we're looking at how our thoughts and feelings and behaviors all relate to each other. So you're not necessarily going to be able to stop a thought from happening, but you can observe how that thought makes you feel and how that feeling then makes you behave. And you can sort of start to intercept that cycle and get to know how you're responding in any given anxious situation, and start to choose more helpful alternatives. So for me, CBT was really important because it made me feel like I was doing something practical. I was actually taking action. And that made, I think if you have something to do as an anxious person, it makes you feel like, okay, well, I don't feel great yet, but I'm doing something about it. Whereas when I started trying to understand it, I was just in regular talking therapy. And that's helpful to a certain point if you've no idea why you're feeling anxious, or you've no idea what anxiety is. But I got to the point where I was like, yeah, I know I'm anxious. I know why. I can see clearly why all this is happening. But what am I going to do about it? So that was a bit too passive for me. So CBT is something I still do all the time. And like, my husband has to remind me all the time. He's like, Caroline, like, have you, if I start to get into that spiral of maybe catastrophizing or overgeneralizing or, you know, personalizing things, like, say, for example, someone being in a bad mood and me thinking, oh, is that my fault? They're all common mind traps associated with anxiety. And CBT just helps you observe those things. It's not about stopping them. It's not about, you know, being a completely different person. It's about saying, okay, I see what's happening here. And the more I take time to tease that apart, I can see maybe why I'm feeling that way. And then I can choose a different response. Or over time, I can start to rationalize with some of those thoughts that are very clearly irrational. And CBT gave me one of my favorite tools, which is always asking if something is fact or opinion. So me saying, you know, oh, I can't do this thing, I'm going to fall flat in my face. Is that based on fact? Like, have you fallen flat in your face before? What is the chance of that happening? Or is it an opinion? Is it just conjecture? So those are really important things for me as well. And another thing that's been really helpful, I guess it's kind of part of CBT, is to allow yourself to be negative sometimes, and allow yourself, like, give your, if your body is producing an anxious response and anxious thoughts, and you try and say, no, I'm not even going to entertain them, they're not going to go away. And sometimes I feel that there's, in this wellness industry, there's such a pressure to always embrace the positive and not give any way to the negative. But the negative is there for a reason. Your body obviously feels in some way like it has a valid, it's concerned, and that concern is valid to you. It's like a child who's afraid. It seems silly to you, but it's valid to the child. So sometimes I think it's really important to say, to sit with your negative thoughts and feelings and let them come out of you, almost like a scheduled worry period, where if something's really affecting me, maybe before I go to bed, instead of it popping up at 3 a.m. when I won't be able to sleep, I'll say, okay, like, what is my worst fear here? What's the worst that can happen? And actually confront that reality. Because often, I always compare it to, like, if you're watching a horror movie and your anxiety is the thing that the person is running away from, okay? And for so much of the movie, we don't see what that is, and it's terrifying, and it's all about anticipation. It's all about perception. It's not, we haven't seen it, we don't know what it is yet. And then towards the end of the movie, when the girl confronts the serial killer, what happens is your fear kind of goes out of it, and it gets replaced by adrenaline. It becomes an awful lot less scary. So when you're willing to stare down the barrel of your fear, you only then can you know actually that you're probably capable of handling it. So for me, running away from negativity and running away from fears is not the answer. You need to sit with them and get comfortable with them. And that for me has been a huge thing as well. And that, again, that goes back to not trying not to have anxiety. It's like accepting it and embracing it, as hard as that might sound. And then on a very practical level, if my anxiety flares up, which it still does from time to time, even though, you know, sometimes I think, well, you know so much now, this shouldn't be happening. no, like, that's ridiculous. My body is going to experience stress. Sometimes it's going to run away on me. I'm not going to be able to have stopped it from building. But very practical things like, I will always instantly cut back on sugar. I will always cut out alcohol. I won't touch caffeine just while I'm in a heightened anxiety phase. All of these things that people are adding in, they're all stimulants, okay? And if you're in an anxious phase, you're already pretty stimulated as is. You don't need any extra help in that department. So people underestimate the power of those things, that when you take them away, you're just giving your body and those hormones and all that cortisol a chance to kind of settle down. So that's something that I really think is probably undervalued. It's kind of what we put into our body. And just dialing back things. So like leaning in and out of the anxiety as I need to. So, you know, if I feel like an anxious wave coming on, I look at my calendar and think, okay, what's not essential here, and not feel bad about it, but just, okay, you need to pare back, because what's happening is you're burning the candle too much. That's actually creating stress, and too much stress ends up wearing down the higher thinking part of your brain. And you know, when that happens, you're less resilient to coping with the anxious thoughts. So let's just, you know, intercept that by paring back a little bit, doing what makes you feel good. You know, even as simple as, what's one thing today that can make you feel good, and do that. And whatever you can do that enters you into a relaxed state, as long as it's, you know, safe and not illegal, that's going to be massively helpful, because your body is going to have a nice rest, and that's going to bring down the cortisol. So I've always approached it really very practically, from looking at the way my body is, looking at the hormones, like how much cortisol I have, and thinking, how can I bring that down? Instead of just saying, just stop feeling this way, or, you know, it's ridiculous, or think about how much worse off it could be, because that will get you nowhere.
Yeah, I think that's really what we all need to remember. I think suppressing it never works. You know, often we'll use alcohol to try and deal with anxiety, but that doesn't work. That's another way of kind of suppressing it, and actually giving yourself permission to feel it, knowing that it's okay to feel what you feel. You know, facing things head on is the way to deal with it and to process it.
I think what you say there, like giving yourself permission, is hugely powerful. Like, that's surrendering to how you are, when you are, as you are, whatever it is you're feeling. And that involves self-compassion, which is another, I guess, tool that I would have turned my nose up at. I would have thought, oh, hippy dippy. But again, the more I read into the neuroscience of it, and a neuroscientist I interviewed the other day said, if self-compassion was a pill, we would each take it every single morning, because it's that powerful. And if you're an anxious person by nature, you're probably going to be quite self-critical in nature as well. And we think that being self-critical and saying, oh, get a grip, and, you know, you shouldn't feel this way, and don't be ridiculous, we think that will sort of motivate us out of the anxiety. But actually, self-criticism, if you look at a brain pattern of someone who's being self-critical, the cortisol and the activity is so much stronger and more stressed out. It triggers your fight or flight system. So when you think that that's being helpful, you're actually doing damage. You're just adding more fuel to the fire. Whereas with self-compassion, which is where I might say, okay, you know, Caroline, you're feeling anxious. How can I help? Or what's one thing we can do to maybe make today a little bit easier? Or it's okay that you feel this way. And just like, compassion is to kind of suffer with. And like, we're so good at doing that for other people and not for ourselves. But actually, when you start to really bring self-compassion into your life, it's not just a nice idea. Physiologically, it's actually producing oxytocin and nice hormones, and it's down regulating that stress response and that cortisol. So for me, again, when you look at it that way, it's not something you can argue with. So I'm always catching myself now, if I enter self-critical mode, that A, you're actually going to make your anxiety worse, and B, nothing good can come of it.
Yeah, and I would say, from the people that I speak to, not being kind to yourself is one of the biggest things that seems to affect people. It's almost, amongst people with anxiety, almost like a universal thing, that people beat themselves up. And so self-compassion is the antidote that we need.
It really
for that.
Is. Like, if people could accept how unbelievably normal it is to feel anxious, stop trying to change that, stop trying not to feel it, and embrace more self-compassion, I think our suffering of anxiety would halve instantly. And for me, the other big thing is obviously awareness. So understanding and educating yourself on anxiety. It's when people are in the dark and they don't understand it, that's when it's scary, and that's when it gets worse. So for me, in my first book, I divided it into two parts. So it's the assess and address approach. And for me, like, I just found that helpful from, again, because it makes you feel like you're doing something active. So the assess part is understanding, okay, what actually is anxiety? You know, we hear about it all the time. What actually is happening? How normal is it? Why do we feel this way? Why am I personally feeling this way right now? What are the different vulnerability factors at play that may have led to me to feel a little bit more anxious today? And that might be you have your period. It might be that you've been unwell. It might be that you had too much going on. And taking a step back and looking at your life without judgment and thinking, oh, well, maybe it makes sense that I feel a little bit overwhelmed right now. And then the address part is, okay, well, now you understand it. You understand why you're feeling this way. You just understand how your brain works and the chemistry and all the different parts of the body that are involved, because that's in itself, like, that knowledge is so powerful. And then you're in a position to be able to address it, whether that's, you know, CBT, whether that's medication for some people. It was something I chose to go on because I was so ill. Or it could be some simple lifestyle factors. It could be leaving the job that's causing the problem, and that could be enough for some people. It could be something practical like acupuncture. So I had a lot of very physical aches and pains in my body in those early few months when it really hit me, and I wasn't able to sleep at all because I was producing so much cortisol that I wasn't producing any melatonin, which helps you go to sleep at night. And your cortisol is supposed to drop off as the day goes on. We all produce it naturally in the morning to kind of wake us up and get us alert, and that's fine, but it's supposed to ease off. But if you're chronically stressed out and anxious, it kind of stays up there at a high point, so it never really comes down, so you don't really unwind physically to sleep, and that in itself becomes another problem. So acupuncture would have helped with that as well. So they're all the different things that I would have done. I mean, none of it's like reinventing the wheel or something you haven't heard before. It's just really like an approach and a gentleness towards yourself that is, for me, the key.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you about something that I heard you talking about on one of your podcast episodes, which is about how to explain your anxiety to someone else, whether that's a partner or someone you're dating or friends or family members. Do you have tips for people on how to broach that subject?
It's such a good question, and it's so hard to answer. It's hard for me because I'm just so interested in understanding human behavior and why we feel the way we do. And so I'm always, whether it's anxiety or not, or even I was writing yesterday about like passive aggression in workplaces. But there are people who message me who say, okay, look, I understand it now myself, but my boyfriend doesn't understand it. And that's creating more anxiety for me because I'm trying to justify it to him or to my parents. And that it breaks my heart because you need that support. And I don't think you have to have necessarily gone through horrible anxiety to understand that it's not just a mood you're in, or it's not something that you can snap out of. And like, again, to go back to that point, it's not, you don't just feel like the unluckiest person in the world, even though you've got great, great fortune. So for me, it's about asking the people in your life who are important to you if they're open to understanding a little bit more. And maybe that's reading. So for me, I was very lucky in that Barry, I kind of thought he'd run for the hills when I started to feel this way, and actually he turned around and said, look, you know, we'll figure this out. And that, even just the word we, was so powerful to me, because I just thought, oh, I'm on my own in this. So he had never had a feather knocked out of him before, like the most laid back, non-anxious person you'd meet. But he went and kind of started reading things up about cortisol. And the more I sort of found things, we kind of delved into it together. And he actually can tell me now what's happening to me when I don't necessarily know myself. And I just think that, I mean, I was very fortunate in having someone who was willing to understand it with me. Because that, for me, like, that education is so crucial. So I would say, I mean, I've told people, there's lots of podcasts in the mix there in my series and in the book that are really useful for people who are trying to be supportive to someone who is going through anxiety, but maybe you're not that person. And it just takes so much pressure off the person experiencing the anxiety, because they don't have to explain it to you, they don't have to justify it to you, and all they want is to know. All we all want when we have anxiety is reassurance and acceptance that it's normal. And oftentimes, a lot of the time, I think people are afraid to explain it to, maybe if they're dating someone new or their family or their friends, And they don't give them enough credit in for the fact that maybe they actually will understand more than you think. And because it's so common, maybe they'll have felt it themselves, but maybe they wouldn't have put a label on it, or maybe they wouldn't have identified it as anxiety, but they'll probably be able to relate more than you think. And when you confide in someone what it's like, and just ask them, can I explain to you what it's like, or sort of where my mind goes, or how it feels for me, then give people a chance to listen and to understand, and don't assume you're going to be met with brick wall. But for people who are met with a brick wall, it's devastating, because you're really then left to your own devices. But I think the most crucial, the most important thing is that you understand it for yourself. You know, you can't control the rest of the world. Only you can understand it. And if you feel like so worried about other people, just stop feeling the need to justify it to anyone else. Just all you have to justify it to is yourself. You only have to be self-compassionate to yourself. You don't have to, and no one else has to technically do that for you. That's the most important thing, I think. But yeah, I wish it was easier for people to get more people to understand. But I'm hoping that with like the kind of conversations we're having, and the more it's spoken about and the more it's normalized, and also I think it's really important that people who don't have anxiety understand it, so that, you know, when they enter a stressful period, they'll be able to say, oh, I know what's going on here, you know, I know what I need to do. Whereas for me, when it hit me, I had no idea, I had no clue, and it was so much worse because I was like, what the hell is this? Whereas if I kind of knew, oh, anxiety is something so normal, I probably wouldn't have freaked out as much as I did. So I think there's like myriad reasons why people who don't have anxiety should make an effort to understand it.
Absolutely. And I suppose if you're somebody that is prone to catastrophizing, you might be catastrophizing what people will think when you open up to them. Mm-hmm. And actually, as you said, people may very well be more, you know, open to understanding it than we think at that time.
I think so. Like I said at the beginning, like, we're all vulnerable. We all have that in common, and we all have an amazing capacity for empathy, but we're afraid to broach it. And really, people are a lot more understanding. You don't have to have, like, someone can tell me about something terrible that happened to them. I don't have to have it happen to me to be able to be supportive to them. You don't have to be in the trenches with them, but you can say to someone, okay, like, is there anything I can do to maybe, instead of saying, oh, how's your anxiety now? How's your anxiety today? Like, none of that's helpful, because it's not like a vomiting bug, you know. So it might be a case of, oh, I have a phase of a couple of weeks, and that checking in all the time actually probably isn't all that helpful. But it's being able to say to someone, you know, I'm having a bit of an anxious phase right now, and just put it out there, and then it's there. It just, like, instead of trying to pretend like you're not, and it kind of just diffuses the tension, I think, in yourself, for me. So like, I will say to Barry, it's not that we're like analyzing it to death, but I'm saying, oh, I'm feeling a little bit anxious today. And he's like, okay, you know, what is there any, like, do you want to chill out, watch Netflix? Is there any one thing you can do to make yourself feel a bit better? And it's by his reaction that it's okay that I feel anxious, makes me feel like it's okay that I feel anxious. Whereas if he reacts and says, oh my God, like, what's wrong with you? Then I kind of mirror that. So even if, you know, I think it, just to go back to that, if people in your life, just ask them to just say, listen, I want to be able to say it out loud when I feel anxious. You don't need to solve it for me. I just need to know that you're there for me. People aren't always looking for answers. They're just looking for support. And I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point, because often people feel the need to give us solutions or try and fix us, you know, particularly, I know men have got a reputation for doing that. I know that we all do that from time to time, but actually just letting them know, I don't need you to try and fix this. Can you just listen to me, or can you just give me a hug, or whatever it is that you need.
Or you don't need to be told, oh, well, think about this thing that could be worse. You don't need a solution. You just need, look, I hear you, that I'm really sorry that you're feeling this way. It's crap. Yeah, it is. Like, do you want to go for a walk? Do you want to talk about something else? Do you want to, you know, just that's all it takes for someone to feel supported.
Absolutely. Yeah. So thank you so much for sharing everything that you shared. I think.
Thank you, Chloe.
People are going to feel very supported by this episode. Can you share a bit about where people can find out more about you and your work and check out the things you're up to?
So mindandbeauty.ie is my website, where I'm sharing like regular articles and content around well-being and different, like I said, I wrote something yesterday about toxic workplace environments. So I kind of go a little bit outside of anxiety and talk about well-being there as well. And then the podcast, if you search for Owning It, the anxiety podcast, you'll get it probably everywhere you get your normal podcasts. The books are available widely, Owning It and The Confidence Kit. And the third book will be called Naked, and that will be out in May, and I'll be sharing details on my Instagram. That's kind of everything kind of goes through my Instagram, like yourself. So I'm at Caroline Foran if anyone wants to follow me there. And I'm also sharing a lot of regular updates now about managing anxiety through pregnancy, which is probably quite niche but helpful for people who are in the same boat.
Amazing. And I'll put all those links in the show notes for everyone to click through to. Thank you so much for speaking to me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really hope you liked it. I really felt so good after chatting to Caroline. If you liked it, come on over and let us know on Instagram. Find me at Chloe Brotheridge. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, leave a rating, and share it with a friend that you think might need to hear this conversation today. And just a final reminder to join the Confidence Challenge that's coming up very, very soon. Enter your details at karmayou.com/confidence. It's totally free and it is going to be helping so many people. I just know it and I can't wait. So I hope you're going to join us. I'm wishing you lots of love and hope you have a great week. Chat to you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.